couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Free Guy, Coda, Bleed With Me, Slasher Flesh and Blood, and Marvel's What If. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring a look back at an older film for very specific reasons in the news. You're going to have to wait to the end of the show to find out. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/Kevin Carr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is the box office for The Suicide Squad. I'm sure if you follow any sort of film news or entertainment journalism or box office news, you saw all these think pieces of, oh, The Suicide Squad bombed, it didn't do well, and why is it? Who's to blame? Well, it's worth pointing out that it has the highest R-rated opening of the pandemic, and we are still in a pandemic, people. We are still in a pandemic. There's rising cases, Delta surge in almost every state in the union. And may I remind you that since the CDC changed its masking recommendation for vaccinated people, it has never said unvaccinated people should ditch the mask. And I just went to a movie this week, just a regular showing, and I didn't see, I think I saw two people with masks on in the theater. And I'm like, well, half the population of where I live is vaccinated, so the other half of the people just aren't wearing them. Maybe this is why we have this such a variant spread. But we are still in a pandemic, and so the box office is still going to respond to that. And on top of it, Suicide Squad had a day and date release on HBO Max. Now, the movie made $26.2 million over the weekend, which is not even close to what the first movie made, which was like $130-some million over its weekend. But there was no pandemic in 2016 when that first movie came out. Plus, that other movie was PG-13. And it was before all the angst with the direction of the DC Extended Universe as well. So there's a lot of non-similar elements happening. But the movie did make about $70 million worldwide, which was in the window of estimation of what they were saying. Now, like I said, you cannot ignore the pandemic. The box office is at about 60% of what the box office should be. And sure, something like A Quiet Place Part 2 did very, very well, but imagine how much more it would have made if it would have come out of the pandemic. And it was also kind of like that first one, so it had that big push for people to go to see. And movies like F9, that's considered a hit, but that's box office at about 60% of what the last one made. And with the Delta variant all over the news, which is unlike the previous week, so you can't even compare this to Black Widow, because the Delta variant hadn't made its way as much into America, and certainly hadn't made its way into public knowledge and awareness, and it hadn't had the spikes yet, so you can't even compare this to like Black Widow. But there's other things going on that have nothing to do with the pandemic. It's August. Movies start slowing down in August. Kids are going back to school. You already see a trend of reduced box office going into the fall, and August and September are notorious for really low box office numbers. Then it was R-rated, so you cut out a lot of the kids that would go see it or that could be allowed to go see it. And then on top of it, I think that it played even more for people to watch it at home on HBO Max. I'd love to see what the internal numbers are from Warner Brothers, because not only could you just watch it in the comfort of your own home, if you wanted to see it and you got kids, you don't want to take your kids to that movie. So not only do you have to pay to go see it in the theaters, you got to pay for a babysitter to watch your kids. So it was just easier to just watch it after the kids went to bed. As things slow down and the Delta variant keeps vaccinated people away, because that's what is happening, studios are going to lean towards streaming again. And there are certain things that have already happened. Venom, There Will Be Carnage, that movie got bumped into October. So this stuff's already happening in direct response to the Delta surges. They're going to respond to this, because the box office in the theaters is not coming back, and now we're sliding already down, so there's less of it yet. For it to have really bounced back. That was should have happened this summer. It did to a degree, and then it got punched down again with the Delta variant. And now you're seeing people having less of a demand to go to the theaters to see a movie. The other thing that's, I think, a smaller thing that people have pointed out, you can't sustain these $200 million budgeted films with a pure theatrical release anymore. Before the Delta variant took hold, I've heard pundits say that the box office might not even recover until 2023 or 2024. And with those pure theatrical runs not bringing in the money that they had, that this might be what it's going to be for the next foreseeable future. So, you know, maybe we reduce the budget of movies. That's one of the reasons why all those independent films did so well last summer. Now, the other piece of news that came out this week is, and it came out really late on Thursday, along with the shifting of the release dates, Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings, Disney came out and said they're doing that exclusive theaters. They're not going to be putting that on Disney Plus. They're calling it an experiment. Now, some people have speculated that this is in response to the Scarlett Johansson's lawsuit and that they can't cover the spread, so to speak, with the money that's going to the stars of the movie. I don't know, because honestly, aside from Michelle Yeoh and Awkwafina, I don't recognize anybody from that movie. And that movie looks incredibly similar to stuff like Mortal Kombat or Snake Eyes. It doesn't look like it's differentiating itself, certainly not as a Marvel movie. So it's a bad sign that movies are shifting, and this is how it starts. And I don't know whether theaters are going to recover again, but here's the big problem that I think they're finally realizing is the theatrical experience is not essential. Movies are essential. Entertainment's essential, but the theatrical experience may not be essential. And it certainly isn't for some of these movies. And I think they're testing it. They tested it with Black Widow and they're testing it with Shang-Chi to see how well the box office does without theatrical. I do not think that movie's going to make the $80 million opening weekend that Black Widow did with or without Disney Plus. I just don't think the awareness is there for that release. And it's coming out on Labor Day, which is a notoriously low weekend for movie money. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit really quickly is Kate, which is coming to Netflix on September 10th.
I think I was poisoned before the hit. Who was the target?
Grand Honcho of the Yakuza.
How much time do I have?
14 hours, maybe 15.
Kate, it's gonna be okay.
You won't get any more questions from me after today.
Who are you?
I'm Kate.
You've got Mary Elizabeth Winstead playing another female John Wick character. And we've seen these characters show up a lot. And they're, oh, we're going to have the female John Wick. She's going to go on a rampage. She's going to kill people for revenge. It's getting a little tired, but sure, it might be a good movie. I don't know. Now you got to differentiate between the John Wick knockoff. And this looks like it might be okay, but they're going to have to do a lot to top Gunpowder Milkshake, in my opinion, for that female John Wick. The next one I want to talk about is Cry Macho, which is in theaters and on HBO Max, September 17th.
You owe me, Mike. You gave me your word. And that used to mean something. My son, Rafael, he's in trouble. I want to get him out of Mexico.
You want me to go down there and kidnap him?
Please, just get him back up here.
You used to be strong. Macho.
I used to be a lot of things. But I'm not now. This macho thing is overrated.
This is the latest Clint Eastwood movie. I think it's an interesting response he has to his public persona of the macho guy, of one of the famous tough guys. And Clint Eastwood has been a sensitive dude in his movies for decades. And I think this is him directly answering that. And I think that's kind of cool. But my God, he's looking like he's... really? I mean, he's up there in age, and he's already slowed down as a filmmaker, even though he's making movies. So I just hope this one has enough traction to at least keep my interest. I'll probably be watching it in the middle of the night, so hopefully I don't fall asleep. Anyways, that's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Coda and Bleed With Me. We'll be right back. back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the current movie reviews and talk about Coda. A daughter of deaf parents is the only hearing person in her home. She helps them out with their fishing business, but soon discovers a love for singing while she's at school.
You're the girl with the deaf family?
Yeah.
I just want to tell you right now.
And you sing. Interesting.
Something's got a hold on me, yeah.
What are you doing next year?
Working with my family. Let me tell you
now. I've been coaching for Berklee College of Music. I can help you get a scholarship. There are plenty of pretty voices with nothing to say. Do you have something to say?
This movie, it's a very relatable movie. And it uses deaf actors. Marley Matlin, of course, everybody knows who she is from Children of the Lesser God. She plays the mother, but the guy who plays the father and her brother are both deaf actors, which is great, as they should. I mean, if you're going to have a deaf character, why not cast a deaf actor? I mean, deaf people have their own culture. They really do have their own group. Deaf people, I mean, even ASL, you know, American Sign Language, it is a whole new language and it's a whole form of communication. And one of the things they were trying to do in this movie is play that bridge. And that's what this girl is. She's torn between two worlds because the family keeps to itself because there's nobody else that's deaf in town. It's a small little fishing village. And I honestly find this to be a little more accessible to people than even last year's The Sound of Metal, because The Sound of Metal was about a man going deaf. But this one is more accessible, I think, because it's just a normal American family. It's not somebody who is injured to become deaf. She just happens to be the only one in her household who can hear. But she serves as the interpreter, and so she's torn. She's stuck with them because there's certain things they're unable to do because they've always had her throughout her life, so she doesn't have their own personal infrastructure. For example, on the boat, she's the one who handles the radio because you can't really deal with a radio if you're deaf. So she's, you know, the person who has to talk to the shore when you have to, you know, and those sort of things she's running into. And because she can hear, she loves music. She puts in her headphones and their parents get mad because they think she's not paying attention to them, which that's a teenager thing. And then, of course, she discovers this love of music. She always had music, but she joins the choir. And the choir director is played by Eugenio Debrez. He did stuff like Overboard and Instructions Not Included. He plays the choir director. And he's, you know, it's a little bit of a cliche role that he plays. But he's the one who brings her out of her shell and actually finds the talent that she has. Now, it's not a comedy, but it's lighthearted. But it deals with some very heavy stuff, and it deals with a teenager who's going through all the problems of being a teenager, of dealing with bullies and unpopularity and, you know, your own self-image issues and all that kind of stuff. And then you throw on the top of the fact that she is the lifeline from her family to the hearing world, and they are not as able to effectively do things without her, and she is torn, and it's still just about a family. And I think that that's where the humanity is in this movie. It's a good film. It's a great movie to watch. It's very heartwarming and sweet. There's some things when you watch it, you're like, there's a lot of stuff in the background. You're like, well, this wouldn't actually work out exactly the way they've got it going on. But for the sake of propelling the story, you know, it's not about how scholarships work in college. It's about this girl trying to follow her dream that literally her parents and brother cannot connect to because they can't hear. And you know, I mean, as much as they can emphasize and try to understand, if you can't hear, you don't have the full appreciation of music as somebody who has the sense of hearing. So Coda is a wonderful movie. Now, right now it's on Apple TV Plus. So you got to have a subscription. It's worth getting the subscription. Apple TV Plus is really kind of beefing up the stuff that they've got, not just like Ted Lasso and Mythic Quest and some other good shows and movies, but, you know, now they picked this Sundance winner, and it is worth checking out. It's worth seeing. It's also in theaters this week. It's kind of doing a rollout, so next week it's going to be in other theaters. Like my local town, Columbus, Ohio, it comes out next week, but elsewhere, in a lot of theaters, it's out in theaters right now. So, and if you go see it in theaters, they've got subtitles burned into it. The subtitles of them signing are there so people who are hearing people can understand what they're saying. But it's releasing in theaters with the subtitles burned in, which I think is a good inclusive thing to do. And, you know, part of it is the world has gotten used to watching subtitles over the last year and a half because you got all the streaming services. Well, it's, you know, it's a deaf movie. So you're going to have people who are deaf who are going to want to see this movie because it's about them. You know, why cut out part of your audience? So I think that's a wonderful little thing they're doing. But Coda, I got to say, it's totally worth checking out. It's a beautiful little film. It totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I don't have a whole lot of time left, but I think there's enough to talk about Bleed with me. During a getaway with friends, a young woman fears that one of them is secretly consuming her blood in the middle of the night.
Wake up, we're here.
I kind of lucked out that they were hiring, and I met Emily on my first day. Just remember seeing this look in your eyes and thinking, oh my God, this poor girl needs me. I never understood why you liked me anyway. What happened last night?
You started telling us about some stalker.
I don't know what you're talking about.
How did you cut yourself?
This is an exclusive release on Shudder, which I've talked about before. You know, it's a streaming service that does horror fiction. And it came out earlier this week, and it's a very slow burn thriller. You know, there's a subgenre of horror that's Cabin in the Woods horror. And they even made the movie The Cabin in the Woods. You know, stuff like Evil Dead is a great example of a cabin in the woods where people go out to the middle of the woods and see either monsters or demons or just serial killers come after them. But I've been noticing recently that there's sort of a sub-subgenre of the cabin in the woods thriller that is the slow burn intimate cabin in the woods, or I call it the Airbnb release. These are where they're not going to some rustic cabin in the woods. They're going to this nice home in the woods, really. And they're isolated because they're out in the middle of the woods. And something like Us fits into that, because the cabin in the woods in Us wasn't scary. It was the tethered that were coming after him that made it scary, although they eventually got out of the house. But I've seen other movies. There was that movie Black Bear that came out last year with Aubrey Plaza, and that wasn't as much a horror movie, but Violation was another one that came to Shudder a couple months ago. I covered that on the show. So Bleed With Me feels very intimate because it's just these three characters in this very nice cabin. And the one girl thinks that she's being consumed partly in the night. And so there's a mystery about it. And I think one of the reasons these movies tend to become very popular now, and at least to be made, is because, you know, you have one nice set and you only have a couple actors, and so you can do it on the cheap. But you do suffer from the fact that it can sometimes be too much of a slow burn. And that's one of the things that I didn't like about this movie. It takes such a long time. It really feels like it would have been an intriguing 20-minute short, but dragging it out to a whole feature length, I don't feel it had the depth to warrant that long of a period. So I wasn't a big fan of it, but I think if you find your suspense in the not knowing, but not necessarily setting up with tension, but it's just the not knowing, you might enjoy this one. But it did kind of leave a little bit for me to desire. So I'm going to have to say that Bleed With Me kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Free Guy and Slasher Flesh and Blood. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and hit one of the big ones this weekend, and that is Free Guy. A bank employee discovers his life is part of a violent video game.
My name is Guy.
Sunday should be warm and sunny, just a scattering of drive-bys.
And I live in paradise. And I work at the bank.
Everybody's out of the bank!
I thought I had everything I needed. But then I met her.
Everybody down on the ground. Everybody except you.
Me?
Guy, there is no easy way to say this. This world, it's a video game. You're not real.
Now, we've seen this setup before, where somebody is a character in a video game or a movie or a book, and they gain sentience in various different ways. You've had people enter into the video game or book or movie and interact with somebody, and then that person or the character becomes self-aware. So this is not a brand new concept, but it is presented in a way, at least I don't recall seeing in such the extreme. Now, the game that this guy's in, it's this thing called Free City, and it's the best I can describe it is if you were to take the violence of Grand Theft Auto and put it into this open source where you interact with people all in real time, like Minecraft or Fortnite, and just have every single violent element involved at once. That's basically what this game is. It just has people running around doing bank heists and, murdering people and shooting people and blowing up buildings and all this kind of thing. That's the point of the video game. And you see this in the trailers. And the problem with one of these sort of high concept ideas is you explain the concept and then you know what the movie's about. And then you sort of are going through the motions. So the idea of it being a video game in real life, once you know that, and it's pretty clear at the beginning of the film, then you're just waiting for things to happen. And it's based on heavily the reaction that Ryan Reynolds has. It's based on his comedy. It's based on his wisecrack. It's based on him realizing this situation and seeing more and more absurd things happen throughout. And that's okay. It works for a comedy. That is a tough premise to stretch over 2 hours. So they have this sub story in there, which, and that's, I say it is a sort of almost a subplot, because it's really Ryan Reynolds' movie as Guy, as this self-aware NPC. And you've got this one character, this woman who goes in as Molotov Girl, and she is in real life trying to find something in the video game that shows that she created a certain element to it, because she's having a feud with the guy who actually runs it. Of course, you have this evil video game magnate behind it, played by Taika Waititi, who's funny, but not as funny as he is portrayed in the trailers. It's not as fresh for his character. I wanted to see a little bit more enthusiasm, or at least some more, overt slapsticky kind of Ryan Reynolds level of humor that Taika Waititi can do. But you don't really get that. But her character is connecting with Guy, and she needs to help him sort of find the proof that she created the code in this video game. And so that works. But the problem with a film like this is you kind of have to approach it one of two or three different ways. You either have to approach it as a complete full-on absurd comedy, and that's what they do for about half the movie. But with some of these absurd premise comedies, at a certain point, once you kind of hit the 45 minute or hour mark, you're just like, okay, the joke's played out. Do we have any sort of real characters here? So then you also then have to pivot it into a real story of humanity about a person falling in love with somebody else, trying to better themselves, and the realization. So you could do that, and that works to a degree. But the problem is that this movie, when you start getting into that human element of the story, it loses its fantastic element, and then it's just a bunch of people sitting behind screens, and that's not interesting. On top of that, they also have the nuance of the video game profession and trying to balance, the message of, oh, well, maybe it's just something you should have to have fun, and it's not just about numbers, but at the same time, it is about numbers because everybody wants the new concept. The movies expend so much energy keeping the concept, the idea, and the premise from completely collapsing that it doesn't have the energy to really give good characters. Because on the flip side of it, you could either do an absurd comedy, or you could do it on something that's actually, quite heady and contemplative, and you're thinking about life and what it means to be alive, and, something like that, which is a much more esoteric type of film. And that's not what this movie is. So it's really kind of trying to tell these two stories. And it really shows up at the end. I won't tell you, I'm not going to spoil anything, but the ending takes forever to get through because the movie can't decide whether it's Ryan Reynolds' character's movie or if it's this girl in the real world, whether it's her movie. And kind of like when the action's over, you wrap up the stories and you roll the credits, but they try to wrap up everybody's story. And at a certain point, you're like, well, I don't care about these people. The story's over. So there are some very funny moments in this movie, and it's high energy, but it just doesn't have the humanity that the character wants it to have. I mean, it doesn't have the humanity that will sustain a 2-hour movie, but it's fun and it's got some jokes in it that work and it's got some very funny moments. But in a way, it's also still kind of forgettable. So I'm going to be nice. I'm going to say it kind of rocks, but you know, it just barely skates over that hump to get there.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Slasher, Flesh and Blood. This is another one that is on the streaming service Shudder. It's a series. Season 4 of this horror series follows a family reunion in which the descendants of a patriarch must face multiple challenges to become the sole heir to a fortune. Oh, and a mass killer is also hunting them.
Why are we all spending a long weekend together when you all hate each other so much?
We don't hate each other. It's just...
sometimes families get complicated.
We used to play a game every year to celebrate what it means to be a Galloway. I've decided to revive our competition one final time. Each one of you will be knocked out one by one.
What are we playing for?
My entire fortune.
The Slasher series premiered, I think, on Chiller. And then for season 2 and 3, they moved it to Netflix. And this is season 4, and it's going exclusively to Shudder. So if you want to watch Slasher, you can go watch the first 3 seasons of it on Netflix. I've not seen those first 3 seasons. This is my introduction to it. And it's interesting. It falls in that sort of that same setup as a movie like Knives Out or Ready or Not, where you've got this acerbic, horrible, wealthy family that unpleasant things are happening to them. Much more closer to Ready or Not, if you remember that movie with Samara Weaving, where she has to play basically a kind of a hide and seek game, and it's to appease this demon that had helped the family get their money. There's no supernatural side to this, but it is a slasher movie, and it mixes two story ideas, which can be a problem, as I mentioned with Free Guy, that kind of gets in the way. But this one actually benefits from it because, the slasher concept is pretty simple. I mean, Friday the 13th is a fun movie, but there's not a whole lot of depth to it. It's just about a guy killing people. The first one was the mom killing people. Oh, sorry. If that's a spoiler for a 41-year-old movie, my apologies. But the slasher movies are very, very simple plot-wise, and it takes something that's a little bit more intricate, the nasty family movie, and it adds to it by weaving that in. And so at a certain point, you don't know who's pulling which strings. You don't know if it's people doing bad things to each other or if it's this killer that's doing it. And of course, there's a mystery behind it. And I really like that. And, it doesn't play as well as something like Ready or Not, because at a certain point you do look at this and say, why are you even still in this family? Because I've had some uncomfortable moments in family functions over the years. Everybody has. I have yet to have an uncomfortable moment, like pretty much it seems to be every single time this family gets together. So, you do kind of roll your eyes and say, this could have been solved by just disowning your own self. So it works for a story. I think it's creepy enough. It's violent enough. It's scary enough. And, it kept me guessing. And I enjoyed this one. I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about What If and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring I Am Legend. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is actually a TV series. It's on Disney Plus, and it's the latest Marvel series. And What If is the next step in priming the audience for the upcoming Marvel movies. Maybe not Shang-Chi, although in the Disney announcement this week, they did make a point to say that Shang-Chi set stuff up for Phase 4. And I think that they're saying that just to get interest, because I don't feel there's a lot of interest for Shang-Chi. I think there's a lot of people that'll be like, yeah, that'll be fine. Maybe I'll catch that later. But What If primes the whole multiverse storyline that's going to be going into phase four, which we've already had primed with WandaVision and Loki. The general idea is something they've done in the comics with Marvel Comics since at least the 60s and 70s. The what if stories are basically taking known stories and changing things up a little bit, you know? It's sort of like, what if Spider-Man never existed? What if Bruce Banner didn't become the Hulk or whatever? Any of these concepts, you know, what the another famous one is the Spider-Gwen, I think kind of came out of the what if idea. What if Peter Parker wasn't Spider-Man, but what if it was Gwen Stacy? And that, and you know, and you actually got a taste of that in the Spider-Verse movie with the sort of the what if ideas. What if Peter Parker was a pig and was Peter Porker, the Amazing Spider-Ham? Even though that didn't emerge from the what if comics, but there's a lot of speculation in this. And so every episode is about a alternate version of a Marvel character.
Every universe is different. Each one unique.
Slow down a little bit. There's a few people in the room that don't understand. Not me. I get it.
I am the Watcher. I observe all that transpires here. Journey to face the unknown and ponder the question.
The first episode, which dropped this week, posits what if Steve Rogers didn't become the super soldier, but instead Peggy Carter ended up becoming the super soldier. So she becomes Captain Carter. And instead of carrying the Captain America shield, she's got the shield with the Union Jack on it because she's British. And it plays it like that as she's a super soldier and Steve Rogers is sort of in the background as this little, still this skinny little kid. Now it's animated and I think they went the animation route because it's a lot easier to put one of these episodes together because you don't have to get the whole cast back together. You don't have to, if you're going to have a cameo by Tony Stark, you don't necessarily need to get Robert Downey Jr. You just need to draw either a picture and then either sample his voice out of previous films or get him to do a quick voiceover or have somebody do an impression of him. Now, the first one, Captain Carter, is very self-contained, but the next ones that come up in the next couple weeks, and I don't want to spoil them, I just want people to sort of experience them as they come. The next couple episodes do kind of really think out of the box and rethink stuff that we have become accustomed to believe as truth and reality in the Marvel Universe. And it's very fun. It's different and it's new. And you can only do this at this point after having an entire franchise around for more than 10 years. Now you can start playing around with it because we've gotten the movie going world up to speed with where people were with the comics, you know, 50 years ago. So I loved What If. I thought it was fantastic. I like the ideas they're doing, and they're tying it into the finale of Loki, and, you know, they're setting things up for these multiverse movies. And it's making me more and more excited to see stuff like Doctor Strange and Thor and Guardians of the Galaxy and the new stuff that's going to be coming up. So I'm going to have to say What If from Marvel totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. There's a very specific reason why I chose the film I Am Legend from 2007. This is available on HBO Max right now if you want to check it out. So it's pretty readily available if you're following up with the streaming services. Will Smith is the last man on Earth left to fight vampirish zombies created from a modified virus, not the coronavirus vaccine.
Nothing happened the way it was supposed to happen. 6 billion people on Earth when the infection hit. I'm a survivor living in New York City. I will be at the South Street Seaport every day at midday when the sun is highest in the sky. God didn't do this. We did.
The reason I chose this, before I actually review it really quickly, the reason I chose this is there was a crazy news story that came up. And it was a story in the New York Times talking about people who had vaccine hesitancy. And I'm going to quote the article. The article goes, one employee said she was concerned because she thought a vaccine had caused the characters in the film I Am Legend to turn into zombies. People opposed to vaccines have circulated that claim about the movie's plot widely on social media. But the plague that turned people into zombies in the movie was caused by a genetically reprogrammed virus, not the vaccine. Kudos to the New York Times to correct that. Not to correct this crazy woman about this was a fictional movie, but to correct her misunderstanding of the plot. As if, I mean, if she had accurately described the plot of I Am Legend, is that something that would have been then valid? No, it's not. Because what's hilarious about this whole thing is the writer of it, Akiva Goldsman, who wrote the script for I Am Legend, which is based on Richard Matheson's original book. He tweets out this week, "Oh my God, it's a movie. I made that up. It's not real." So there's literally people out there that are refusing to take the vaccine because they're afraid they're going to turn into zombies because it happened in a Will Smith movie. We're doomed as a species, aren't we? I wanted to also say, just in case you're worried about real life things imitating art, here are some movie plots that are probably also not going to happen in real life, similar to how the I Am Legend zombies did not come from vaccines. Well, the first one is, Worcestershire sauce will not give you pink eye or make you a zombie, which is a plot point that happened in South Park once. Also, tropical drinks at a exclusive resort are not going to send you to the old beach in the movie Old. TV sets are not, you know, contrary to a lot of people's beliefs, they're not mind control devices as they were in Batman Forever, where you put a blender on top and it shoots green lasers into your head. Also, diet pills are bad. We can agree to that. But they will also not cause sentient fat babies to tear off your body and walk away, as has happened in an old Doctor Who episode. And finally, smoothies from your neighbor will not help you gestate the Antichrist, which is what happened in Rosemary's Baby. So we can tick those off the list of things not to be worried about, along with the coronavirus vaccine, because it's not going to make you a poorly CGI animated zombie vampire thing that's going to go after Will Smith. Now, I had a chance to rewatch it. I haven't seen this movie in 14 years, since it came out in theaters. I have seen Omega Man, which is the 1970s version with Charlton Heston, and I've seen Last Man on Earth, which is the 1960-something movie with Vincent Price that were both based on this story. This movie itself, the scope is cool. The look of desolation of New York City and the effects in that sense are good. And Will Smith does a decent job in the role of this guy just trying to live in this apocalypse, finding more people. The big problem with the film, though, is the effects really do not hold up. If the zombies or the vampire, they don't even say they're vampire zombies. I don't know what they are. But whatever they are, they look terrible. They are as far into the uncanny valley as you can be. Their faces are rubbery and their mouths, their jaws unhinged. They don't look real, even in the slightest. It's an overuse of CGI. Now, I'm not looking for jive talk and disco zombies from the 70s version, because that was absurd. But the effects do not hold up. They were trying to push themselves beyond the limit or beyond their budget, and they look terrible. And that's where the movie breaks down. Also, the movie doesn't have a whole lot happening to it. If you watch the Vincent Price version, there's, you know, it's equally as slow of a film, but it's a much shorter film, and you can tell it's done on a budget. This one's a big budget movie, and it's a Will Smith film, but there's just not a whole lot to work with. So I in retrospect, I wasn't a huge fan of this movie. I actually, right now, I'm going to give it a kind of sucks because the effects so don't hold up. They look so bad now, and they didn't look good back in 2007. So much of the movie relies on those effects, and they're not good. And that just drags down what are otherwise some pretty good performances.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
Also available this week on DVD and Blu-ray, we've got Friday the 13th, an 8-movie collection, Lilies of the Field, and Nashville. And that's it. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about The Night House, Reminiscent, and the epic film Paw Patrol, the movie. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.